This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
If you've been struggling with your weight, Mochi Health is here to help. Mochi Health is a long-term weight loss solution personalized to fit your unique needs and goals. Meet one-on-one with board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians who are on a mission to listen. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medications at an affordable set price and get them delivered to their home each month. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 at checkout for $40 off your first month of membership.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
New open for the Manny Fry Show. We hope you like it. There is a little bit of Annie Fry Show in there, a little bit of Manny Fry Show. This is Ryan Wiggins, Brad Rangin here filling in for Annie today. She will be back on Wednesday, quick weekend trip. Little Super Furry Animals I played in there. I am actually going to go see the lead singer of Super Furry Animals on Wednesday night, so that means I probably won't be here Thursday. I'm driving up to Chicago, just making a random solo trip. I could not find anybody to go with me because that is a band that nobody knows anything about, including my close friends. And they were like, we are aware that you like them, but we are in our 40s and it is a weeknight and it's in Chicago. And I'm like, I get it, but like, don't you want to be young still?
We're old then.
Yeah, so if I'm not here on Thursday, that's why. It's because I'm in Chicago for one night seeing a guy. The band was never that big, especially in America. But now they're 20 years past when they even were around, and it's just the singer who's coming, and he's playing in a bar that may be about as big as this studio. And that's why I'm like, oh, I want to be in the room with that guy.
On the bar.
Yeah, he might be on the bar like Coyote Ugly and dancing around. And I just want to be in the room. You know how it is if you're just like a fan of somebody? I don't even care really what they're doing. I just want to be there to say I was like shook the guy's hand just to say
I know him.
Got a picture.
I met him.
So anyway, that's what's going on. The YouTube live chat poll today is very, very broad, and I've seen some people saying, I just need more context. No, the answer is you have to come up with a context. Yeah. Because you could apply it to the markets, you could apply it to your personal safety. Do you feel safe in 2025? I'm feeling safer, I'm feeling less safe, or I feel about the same. Of course, the reason actually that I said I would like to do this poll today is because of this.
Oh. If he was trying to terrorize our family, our friends, the Jewish community who joined us for a Passover Seder in that room last night. Hear me on this. We celebrated our faith last night proudly, and in a few hours, we will celebrate our second Seder of Passover again proudly. No one will deter me or my family or any Pennsylvanian from celebrating their faith openly and proudly.
We don't really know the motive, though, do we? That was the governor of Pennsylvania, Josh Shapiro. There was somebody who set the governor's mansion on fire, and it's pretty bad. I mean, they legit set it on fire, and nobody was hurt, but they were trying to get him. We just don't know why. As far as we know, there was not really like a... People jumped to the conclusion that this was anti-Semitic.
Well, people on the left were saying this is a right-wing extremist. People on the right were saying this is a left-wing extremist. And it might just be a crazy guy.
You said earlier that the one fact they found...
I had saw something, and I'm still looking to verify this, but they said that something to do with the state of Pennsylvania repossessing and selling his property.
So he was mad at the governor because the law came something after like him that. Or something like that. So it doesn't seem to be motivated by anything other than maybe personal animus, as far as we can tell right now. That could completely change. But at the same time, I had Brad pull this clip from Taylor Lorenz. And here's the deal. I'm not saying Taylor Lorenz represents the entire left. No. I'm not doing that. It's not fair to do that. But she was a writer for a long time at the Washington Post. And the Washington Post kind of does represent the left in a lot of ways. Not that she's the only writer there, but she was a writer there for a long time. This is her talking about Luigi Mangione just this weekend.
Hilarious to see these millionaire media pundits on TV clutching their pearls about someone standing a murderer when this is the United States of America, as if we don't lionize criminals, as if we don't have, you know, we don't stand murderers of all sorts, and we give them Netflix shows. There's a huge disconnect between the narratives and the angles that sort of mainstream media pushes and what the American public feels. And you see that in moments like this. And I can tell you, I saw the biggest audience growth that I've ever seen, because people were like, oh, somebody, some journalist is actually speaking to the anger that we feel.
The women who got her outside court mm-hmm. in New York.
So you're going to see women especially that feel like, oh my God, right? Like, here's this man who's revolutionary, who's famous, who's handsome, who's young, who's smart. He's a person that seems this like this morally good man, which is hard to find.
Yeah, I just realized women will literally date an assassin before they swipe right on me. That's where we are. I'm sure you wouldn't like to be compared to a Trump supporter. But some of how people cannot understand why people have sympathies for Mangione strikes me as the same as a lot of media not understanding why people support Trump.
I totally agree.
It's because a lot of people are just really, really desperate.
They want somebody to take on the system. They want somebody to tear down these barbaric establishment institutions.
This comes in light of new polling that shows that attitudes toward political violence are polarized, in that the majority of Americans still think that political violence is wrong, but more and more Americans think, yeah, that's kind of a viable solution to our problems. That's not a great trend, and that's why we asked the poll today, do you feel safe in 2025? So in light of that, again, now I'm not painting a broad brush here and saying this represents everybody, but I told this story this weekend on my show on Wiggins America, and if you didn't hear it, I'll tell it again. I was driving down Market Street on Tuesday or Wednesday of last week. I don't remember which. It was about 4:30 in the afternoon, so I was headed home. And by the way, the traffic in St. Louis lately, if I don't know if you're going into Missouri, if it's been okay, but if you're trying to get into Illinois, it's terrible.
Awful.
And Sue Thomas does a great job of reporting. So when I'm in the car and I hear her say, oh, if you're trying to get into Illinois, I'm like, thank you. At least somebody just sees me. Thank you.
I feel seen.
Yeah, because it's been really, really bad. Just trying to get out of the city, every bridge they're doing, in her words, emergency repairs on. Now, I live in Collinsville, and I don't know if anybody's talked about this, but a huge portion of 5570 just fell out of the bridge. This was 2 weeks ago or so, mm-hmm. right by where I live. A section of the road that goes over another section of 159 just fell out, and you could just see through it. Amazingly, nobody got hurt. That is a major interstate. Two interstates meet right there, and not a single person drove into what amounted to basically a interstate pothole sinkhole that, I mean, a car could have just destroyed itself driving through this thing. It didn't happen. They were able to get over it and metal plate this thing up. But apparently Illinois is now going, oh, crap, and they're fixing all these different issues. I don't know if that alerted them. I really don't know. I'm just saying, from my perspective, it looks like a huge hole opened up in an interstate, and now they're working on all the bridges.
On all the bridges.
At the same time. And they call it emergency repairs. So take that for what it's worth. But I was driving down Market Street, again, trying to go places I don't usually drive because I'm trying to get out of the city. You've dealt with the same thing. And I see a protest. And this protest is not small, but it wasn't big. It's not the oligarchy tour or whatever.
Right.
It was just a small downtown protest, but the direction I was driving, they were walking the same direction as me, which means their signs were kind of facing away, so I couldn't quite see. So I waited till I got to a stoplight to kind of turn and see what this protest was, because I was interested to see. And the guy, I couldn't see everybody, but the guy who was in the back, who was wearing, it was kind of cold that day, he was wearing a beanie, he was wearing sunglasses, and he was wearing a mask. Mm-hmm. So almost impossible to tell. And that immediately sends up red flags, like, is this going to get violent? Because if they're not going to show their face, you're like, what's going to happen here? But it didn't look like they were trying to be. He was just a little bit in the back, and he was the only one I could really see the sign. And again, he's wearing a mask. The mask is not an N95. It's just one of those paper spit guard masks. And the sign says, "Wash U stands for the science." So naturally, I start eyeing this guy and thinking, is this a Wash U protest? I can't tell what they're protesting. My guess is that the whole protest was against funding cuts for universities and for grants and stuff like that.
It's a Doge protest.
And that was my assumption. But I couldn't help but think, this guy is holding up a sign that says, trust the science, or whatever it was, Wash U, trust the science. And he's wearing a paper mask that does nothing outside, not near anyone. If that's the state of what's coming out of universities, I am okay with cutting some of the grant money that's going to support that science. Again, as I stated at the beginning of this segment, that doesn't mean that's everybody. That doesn't mean that's every single person who goes to every single one of these universities. It just means that I think we've really lost our way. And the Trump administration is doing something very, very interesting right now that's not getting reported on because there's so dang much to report on. And one of those things is they are pulling grants and federal contracts from major universities, mm-hmm. left and right. I should say quickly, not left and right, because they're mostly left. The University of Pennsylvania lost almost $200 million for infractions regarding transgender athletes on women's sports teams. So he's enforcing Title IX. Mm-hmm. Columbia University has lost $400 million in federal contracts because they have not changed some of their, or at least initially, they did not change some of their policies regarding anti-Semitic protests and racist protests. This is happening possibly to Harvard as well. It doesn't go into the specific numbers. It just says the Trump administration is reviewing billions of dollars in contracts and gave the school a list of policies it wants to be changed. Here's what's really going on here, though. The Trump administration, I'm sure, is looking at universities across this country and saying, what exactly are you providing? What exactly is higher education providing at all? And more importantly, if it is providing something, why should you, the taxpayer, be subsidizing it at all? Let alone if it's doing anti-Semitic things and putting boys and girls sports and basically communist indoctrination mm-hmm. is what's going on across the country at some of these, especially Ivy League schools. Why should you have to subsidize that? It's a great question. And the answer is you shouldn't have to subsidize that. There are a lot of private universities that get by former alumni donations. They get by on grants. They get by on tuition. That's how they survive.
A lot of universities have endowments, a lot of them. And these endowments are huge, and they're still collecting gaudy amounts of tuition from students and money from the government, and they just keep stacking money into these endowments. To what purpose? I don't know. Maybe so some dean or some president can have a building built and their name put on it or something like that. But why don't they use those endowments to help the students that are going there?
Look, $400 million has been pulled from Columbia University. And that's probably not all the federal money they're given. I doubt that's 100% of all the money that they're given from the government. But that's nearly $500 million that's going to one university 1 year. That is a ton of money across the country that you're spending. And the argument used to be that, well, yes, but don't we want to educate people? Don't we want to educate our population.
Educating the populace helps the populace.
Helps everybody. But what exactly is the argument now? Is that still the argument? Because I don't think it is. It's the old PBS argument. Well, you want to have something that's not commercially funded, that's just in the best interest of the public. But that stuff is, that's dinosaur stuff.
It is amazing to me how anything like that, PBS is a great example, NPR is a great example. If it's not, what is it, corporately funded, it always gets infested by left-leaning people.
100% of the time.
And it always gets it's never down the middle, and it's always bent to the left.
And the question would be for any leftist listening, if all of these institutions were not just right-leaning, but pretty hard right, because, I mean, universities mm-hmm. are hard left.
Right.
It's like 98% of the faculty gives to Democrats. It's not even close.
Right. If they required you to wear a MAGA hat to graduate.
Whatever it is, if it's right-leaning or hard right, would you be okay with your tax money going to it? Of course you wouldn't. So the Trump administration is doing something very smart here. They're doing the same thing with illegal immigrants. They're targeting the worst first. They're going after the gang members, the criminals, mm-hmm. and then they're going to move to just regular illegal immigration. That's what's going to happen. They're doing the same thing with universities, and this is underreported. That they're starting with the worst offenders. They're going after people who are breaking Title IX. They're going after people who are not protecting women. They're going after people who are not protecting Jewish students or really any sort of class of people that's being persecuted. If you're not protecting them, then they're going after you first. But what's I believe what's going to happen is eventually they're going to move from the worst offenders to everybody. Because there's no justification for us spending tax dollars on basically leftist indoctrination at this point. Mm-hmm. And it is great to see that this is happening behind the scenes, sort of. I mean, it's out. If you want to find it, it's out there. It's just not being reported that much because everybody's talking about tariffs. We've been talking about tariffs. We're going to talk about budgets and everything economic coming up in just a minute with Ryan Schmelz. He's Fox News Radio's Capitol Hill and White House correspondent. He is, of course, our correspondent as well on Capitol Hill because he joins us every week with the lowdown on the big, beautiful bill. Where is it? Is it going to pass? What's in it? Let's talk about that next with Ryan Schmelz.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
If we slash taxes on American workers and producers, our economy will soar. Jobs will surge, manufacturing will boom, and our country will prosper like never, ever before. We got to get this big, beautiful deal done. We got to get it done. And get it done now. Don't wait 2 weeks. Don't wait 2 weeks. See, bad things happen. Crazy things happen in politics. Just get the damn thing done and stop showboating. A couple of people want to, sure, we got to get a little bit more. A little bit more. You know what you're going to get? You end up getting nothing. You end up getting a Democrat bill or worse.
That's Donald Trump, of course, talking about the big, beautiful bill that he keeps referring to it as. Maybe it'll actually be called that. Fox News Radio, Capitol Hill, and White House correspondent Ryan Schmelz is here to analyze and break down where exactly is the big, beautiful bill. Ryan, thanks for being here.
Of course. Happy Monday.
So the House has passed this thing. Where is it now?
Now the process has actually begun. So if you thought that this was a challenge for Speaker Johnson to get everyone on board for the framework section of this, now we begin the actual reconciliation process. So that's actually going to be the process of having these committees go and find the spending cuts, figure out what taxes they want to include in there to reach $4.5 trillion in tax cuts, and also go about the energy policy aspect of this too. So this is going to be an interesting dynamic to watch, because when you have that $1.5 trillion goal for spending cuts, as high as $2 trillion, but the floor, according to the baseline, is only $14 billion. So then you'll have conservative members who are going to be, you know, we're going to want to watch them, like Eric Schmidt. You've got Eric Burleson from Missouri, a couple other ones here and there that could be no's if they don't get the spending cuts they're looking for. But then you also have some others, the more moderate members of Congress, who could very well be in rebellion if there's any cuts to Medicaid or any of those programs.
So right now, are you saying that, yes, the House passed it, but it could very well end up back in the House because everybody's still talking?
No. So they passed a framework, is what the House and the Senate have passed. So now they have to go out and vote on the individual aspects of the reconciliation process and actually put into the legislation what they want to put in there. So there are certain rules they have to follow. There are certain things they have to get by, like the Senate parliamentarian. But overall, now we're going to get to the specifics of what taxes are going to be included, right? So you got $4.5 trillion in taxes over a 10-year span. It sounds like a lot of money, but then when you just see how much the Trump tax cuts cost in terms of renewing the 2017 ones, well, that $4.5 trillion gets eaten up real quick. So then when you have President Trump wanting to add in other things like no taxes on tips, no taxes on overtime, it becomes a very small margin that they're working with to get everything in there.
Ryan, is it normal for Congress to pass a framework and then fill it in? Is that the normal process?
This is the normal process in which they do this, and we don't see it often. Keep that in mind, that, in order for reconciliation to really be useful and to be utilized, you usually have to have a president and a president who has control of Congress. So Barack Obama did this. This is how Obamacare became law. President Trump did this back in 2017. That's how they got the 2017 tax cuts passed. And President Biden got a number of his big legislative agenda items passed through reconciliation. So it's not something we see all the time. They can really only do it if those stars align in terms of Congress and the president. But we've seen it happen a couple times the last every 4 years or so.
Hey, Ryan, this is Brad. Quick question for you. I see a lot of people talking about chaos in the House and all this other stuff. My question for you is what we're seeing healthy and all part of the process? Is this normal to see this much chaos, or is this kind of abnormal?
I don't know. This is my first Congress, so it's kind of really hard to tell what the definition of a chaotic Congress looks like, because it's kind of the only one I've ever known. You didn't see a lot of drama, I would say, when Democrats had control of that House for just a couple of months under Nancy Pelosi. There wasn't really too much major infighting going on, but that's also because Pelosi was on her way out, so the stars were kind of aligning for new Dem leadership to start taking over there. But at the same time, this is, or at least the last Congress, was the first one ever where they booted a speaker. We'd never seen that happen before. And that led to an entire month of infighting, of very long closed-door meetings, of elections that were behind closed doors. They had, I think it went through four nominees during that span before Mike Johnson finally had enough votes to actually become speaker. So that was certainly something that was very abnormal for any congressional calendar.
Ryan Schmelz is with us. He is Fox News Radio's Capitol Hill and White House correspondent. He's, of course, kind of our correspondent. He joins us every week, and we're happy about that. Ryan, what can you speak to the specifics of what they're talking about? Is there anything that once they pass this bill that the average American is going to notice that it'll affect them in any significant way?
Well, I think if they get no taxes on tips passed, that's going to very much uproot a lot of the tax policy in this country. I think it could be the same thing for no taxes on overtime. Obviously, the 2017 tax cuts would avoid quite a substantial tax increase on a number of different Americans and a number of different income brackets. So those certainly are things that I think we would notice very quickly. You'd probably see a lot of the DOGE cuts being codified into law. But maybe some energy policy would be things that you notice too, because that's actually a part that's in here that might not get as much attention as people think, but certainly that this could greenlight a lot of new energy projects if they get this bill passed.
Let's talk about tariffs. You know, everybody's talking about the market's up today, or at least it was last time I checked. Can change in any couple of minutes. But the news that I was seeing this weekend and even this morning that I really haven't heard much about, so I'm hoping you have heard a little bit more about this, is that Trump has actually got some deals either really close to being done or done with multiple nations to get rid of some of these tariffs. Have you heard anything more about that?
I have not heard too much on that. A lot of the attention really has been on China and the back and forth that's going on between President Trump and President Xi, and kind of figure out what the end game looks like there, because both countries, the tariffs they're putting on here are pretty substantial and they haven't really had too much of a negative impact on the markets just yet. It looks like the markets are still reacting positively to the pause in all the other countries, especially the allied countries. But right now, there's a little bit of a back and forth going on with China and President Trump. And, you know, I think this gets received a little bit more well. You know, we have polling that shows that the American people don't really like the idea of tariffs on allied countries. But when you start talking about tariffs on adversarial countries like China, like Russia, the polling gets a lot higher and goes over 50%.
So America sounds like it's willing to kind of see this through on Chinese products. Is part of that you know, China is just seen by both parties as just, there's no real contingency in the United States that says openly anyway, yeah, China's great, we should be doing more business with them.
I think, yes, there is a consensus on the concerns about China from both parties. I think that definitely plays into it. I think that there has been a recognition that in some cases, China has gotten the better end of trade deals throughout our history. That's why President Trump tried to focus on getting the USMCA passed. There was a trade deal back when he was during his first term. And I think that there is a little bit more just of a focus on China and a willingness to be focused on China. And what's interesting, too, is, and somebody pointed this out, maybe 10 years ago, a trade war with China would have been a lot more detrimental to U.S. markets. But, you know, there are more trading partners now with the United States that can kind of fill the void with China when it comes to cheaper products. It can't really completely erase China or make up for China, because, you know, think like something like farmers in America who sell their soybeans to China. The Chinese market loves American soybeans. You can't exactly replace that because that's a huge consumption in the market. But there are countries that have stepped up and kind of filled the void with China over the years, not replaced it, like I just said, but it's not the dependency maybe that it used to be.
Ryan, I wanted to change gears one more time. Hopefully I'm not throwing you a curveball here, but rescission packages.
I'm glad you asked. I was going to ask the same thing.
Where are we on that? Do we have any more movement on that? Does that have to be part of this big, beautiful bill? Can it be something else?
Well, yeah, I don't think it has to be a part of the big, beautiful bill. And it's, quite frankly, it's a pretty simple tool for the president to use, because it only needs a simple majority from the Senate and the House. And the president can send it at any time. I've not gotten any specific updates on when or timeline for a rescissions package. But the last big update I got was you had Senator Kennedy and a couple of other Republicans go to the White House. And Kennedy pretty much said to Susie Wiles and President Trump, hey, we want to see a rescissions package soon. And they were told that they would be getting one soon. So soon is probably the best timeline I have for you right now. But I wouldn't be shocked if we see something within the next couple of weeks when Congress gets back.
I understand you just answered the question I was going to ask, but I want to ask a little bit more about it, because this is something that I think a lot of us who are watching DOGE say, oh, well, this is the solution right here. I mean, the rescissions, they just take it to Congress and Congress goes, stamp, all done, cut from the budget. I mean, are they trying, though, to do it all at once, to bring all the DOGE cuts and say, here, let's get rid of all this? Because it seems like they could just bring them one at a time over and over, unless it just takes too much time for Congress to vote that much.
I could probably tell you that when it comes to the Senate, things move slowly there. And right now, a lot of the Senate floor time is being eaten up by confirming President Trump's nominees. There are even thoughts of maybe canceling the April recess in order to get some of these nominees confirmed. So that's kind of a problem when it comes to the Senate, is that, and why reconciliation's got such a big emphasis, is because you save a lot of Senate floor time because you're putting everything into one giant package, and that saves them a lot of time and a lot of effort. On the other hand, though, yes, I mean, there have been senators who've been trying to push for DOGE to send more of these cuts quicker, because I think Rand Paul's maybe a good example of this, where he likes the idea of DOGE. It's made him really become a bigger supporter of President Trump compared to what he was prior to the presidential election. But yeah, there's this question of, well, there can always be legal challenges if you do this by executive order. What the line is, you live by the pen, you die by the pen. So I think there are members, and it's kind of becoming more of a vocal group of them, who are saying, send us a package, let's get this passed, let's actually get these savings on the docket, and then we can move forward from there.
Ryan, I'm all in favor of them skipping the April recess, but does that mean that you don't get a vacation?
That's what would have happened, yes. But we are in April recess. We've got this week, and I'm going to enjoy it.
I just wanted to make sure, because I want to look out for you, too. Before we go, Ryan, I do want to ask you about the SAVE Act. The House has passed this voter bill that would fortify elections a little bit more, make voting a little bit more secure. Where is it at with the Senate? Does it have any chance of passing the Senate?
It might have a chance, but it's to be determined. You know, only four Democrats voted for it in the House. We thought there might be more. Maybe they could have gotten upwards of 10. There was one Democrat last Congress who supported in the Senate. That was John Tester. He's no longer here. He's replaced by a Republican. So I'm not saying it's impossible to find seven Democrats who'd be willing to vote for the SAVE Act, but it's going to be tough. So it doesn't look like the votes are there right now. That could change. I think it just depends on if Leader Thune's going to prioritize trying to pass this, and if they go through a more aggressive whip counter. But as of right now, I just don't think it has the votes.
Are there any Democrats you're hearing? Maybe not seven, but are there a couple?
There could be nothing hard on the record that I've seen just yet, but I wouldn't be shocked if there's a couple at least who are considering it or might want to make some changes to it or amendments, you know, all that could be possible. But just right now, I haven't heard anything hard on the record.
Well, we appreciate the update. Ryan Schmelz is Fox News Radio's Capitol Hill and White House correspondent. And of course, you hear him every week here on the Annie Fry Show. Always appreciate the time, Ryan.
Hey, thank you. Have a great day.
I've just been watching this budget bill because, as we all have been with DOGE, we're all excited about DOGE, and everybody's like, yeah, finally they're cutting, you know, all the crap that we've been spending money on for so long, and the stories that come out, everybody, left and right, goes, oh yeah, there's no defending that one. And yet, as Rand Paul has said, but we're just going to vote for the same budget and refund these things. They're cutting them. We have to cut them. So the right. rescissions thing, like you said, Brad, that is key mm-hmm. to the whole thing. I don't know that it's going to make a big enough dent in the budget to balance the budget, but at least we're moving toward it.
Yeah, it's interesting that you said that we'll be refunding some of these things. So maybe the rescissions have to wait for the big, beautiful bill to get through, and then they can rescind them from the big, beautiful bill.
I would think that all these things are tied together. Yeah. That, you know, because I remember he said Senator Kennedy went and talked with mm-hmm. Trump. This is Senator Kennedy from Louisiana, Republican.
Right.
Who went and talked with Trump about this rescissions idea and package and so on. So they know that it's there. It's got to be included in the discussion of this thing. Is it that they include it in the cuts themselves, or do they pass the bill, then cut it, like you said? I don't know the answer to that. Yeah. I think they're probably trying to figure that out.
Well, yeah, and I think that there's a certain amount of strategy that has to go into it. I mean, it's weird to think of Congress as a strategy game, but it really is that.
That's the only reason that I have been optimistic about what they're doing, because when you look at the hard numbers, they're not cutting enough. We're still going to mm-hmm. be in debt, not just in national debt, but in yearly debt. We're still spending more than we're taking in, and we're cutting taxes, which is great. But then you got to cut more government, and the numbers don't add up.
Right.
But they keep saying yes, but there's a strategy, and there's enough people who are absolute fiscal hawks that are saying, yes, but there's a strategy. And the only thing I can come up with is that there's so many allocations to things they can't really do anything about without changing laws. You know, there's a lot of social safety net stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm not just talking about Social Security and Medicaid. I'm talking about other stuff too. There's a lot of things that you can't just cut from the budget because they're part of the law. So they're already included in it. So you have to kind of cut around these things instead of cutting the things themselves. And that's where I'm like, I think there's probably a lot of strategy in that part while they're trying to do the tax cuts that I'll give them a little bit of deference. But the problem is we've given people deference for a long time and they just keep spending more. It just seems like maybe now is the time where they're going to do something about it.
Yeah, and I'm also really, 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 and this is like with cutting, but I'm really interested to see if they can get that no tax on tips through. The no tax on overtime thing would be huge.
Yeah.
It would be absolute. Like, I don't think people realize how big that is, because people already love going and working overtime, even though the government takes a huge chunk of it, because they get double time, time and a half, stuff like that. And if you could remove the tax burden from that completely, there are people that would never leave work, and the productivity of this country would go through the roof.
Well, the other thing that's really interesting, Todd Sivia was in last week and was just talking about some of the things in the bill that they're really getting no attention. And one of them, because he does a lot of small business attorney, you know, estate planning is what we talk about with him a lot, but he does a lot of things. And he said, you know, one of the things that's in this bill, at least as it is, don't know if it will be eventually, is that right now, if you buy things for your business, hard goods and things like that, there's a 50% tax deduction on that.
Right.
What they're working on as part of the tax cuts is that it would be a 100% tax deduction on all of the hard goods that you bought. Well, you think small businesses wouldn't shoot up like crazy?
Oh my gosh.
That's a 50% gain for them on everything they buy. So that's massive. And it's stuff like that that's not being talked about much.
Well, and what that does is that encourages small businesses not only to be formed, but to also grow. And then what you do when you do that, you grow small businesses. When small businesses grow, then you grow jobs.
Yes.
And like one of the things, you mentioned this in the very first segment, one of the things I always hear from people on the left talking about is like, we don't have enough workers. Yes, that's how supply and demand works. Whenever you don't have enough workers, guess what companies do? They compete for those workers. And guess what else happens? Wages go up. When they're competing for you as an employee, your value is going to go up. So growing small businesses, creating more jobs, you know, limiting the number amount of workers, that's really going to help the American people. And that also increases your tax base.
It's important to have these conversations in light of all the things that are happening, because we're going to focus on tariffs because it's big, it's dramatic, it's international, and it's affecting markets. And that's instant gratification news, which we should cover. I'm not saying we shouldn't. But in light of all the different prongs to this economic change that Trump is bringing about, it makes me excited for what could come, not this year, but maybe next year. I don't know what this year is going to look like. I'm bracing for the worst, honestly. It could be really rough. Like the tariff stuff, it could be really rough on the markets, which could be really rough on the economy. I don't know. It could not be, but I'm just bracing for it. It's the longer term, it's middle term, it's longer term that I'm like, man, if you can reorganize the way that we're doing things in this country and start bringing back the jobs and start benefiting people who want to create, that's the American dream. Yeah. That's the American dream, and that's what we're after. Well, we're long here, obviously. It's 1:47, so we need to get to a break and come right back. This is the Manny Fry Show. Annie on vacation just for today and tomorrow. She'll be back on Wednesday, and we will be right back. All right, but I just keep following this stupid space story. Katy Perry, Lauren Sanchez, Gail King, and Ladies of Blue Origin crew. I got to say, Katy Perry, okay, she's a pretty big name. Lauren Sanchez? Was she somebody before she married Jeff Bezos? Was she a model or something?
I don't know. Maybe.
I didn't know her name until she became
an influencer.
Super rich. Gail King, okay. But is that the best you can do? Because this is just a PR tour, right?
Well, I mean, essentially. But at the same time, too, you got to find people that are willing to do it.
I guess so. But it's space.
I get it.
This gives the influencers more influence, too.
Well, like, if you asked me, Brad, do you want to go up in the Blue Origin spaceship? It's 4 minutes up and down. You'll come back to Earth. My answer initially is no.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I'd do it in a heartbeat.
No, I like, the whole prospect of being on the leading edge of that, if a bunch of people did it and then it's like, okay, they've got this down, it's kind of routine, then I'm down.
I was that way too, but then Lance Bass went and I'm like, well, Lance went, I could do it.
Lance Bass.
If any of the Backstreet Boys go, well, I could do it.
William Shatner made it up and down in the same one.
William Shatner is the, well, William Shatner was a great PR move.
Yes.
He's Captain Kirk.
Yeah.
So yeah, of course you send him up.
Yeah.
And if you want to have a Rocket Man go, you don't want to send Katy Perry.
No.
She's never covered Rocket Man. William Shatner has.
She packed my bags last night, pre-flight. 0 hour. 9 a.m. And I'm going to be high. It's a kite by then. Oh, I miss the earth so much. I miss my wife.
I miss my wife.
It's lonely.
It's like somebody doing a parody of William Shatner doing Rocket Man, but it's actually William Shatner.
You can't actually do a parody of it.
Right.
You can't get more ridiculous.
You know what's beautiful about this, too, is that this was in 1978. It was on TV. You have to think, in 1978, you go out on TV one time, and you just bomb, and then you go home. And you go, eh, that sucked. Oh, well, I'll try to recover. Now, if you bomb, that's your life. You do something, and it lives forever. And you had to think, if you're William Shatner in 1978, you know what? I'll take a shot at this, and if it falls flat, that's the one time anybody will ever see it. But amazingly, somebody actually recorded that. I don't even know how. We didn't have VHS players or recorders at home
yet.
No,
guys, I got this.
Who recorded this?
Some amateur with a reel-to-reel.
Here's the next executive order. Trump needs to bring in the hero. The DOJ investigates, finds the hero that recorded this. Bring him in. Give him some sort of medal. I don't know what it is, but make one up. Give it to the guy that preserved that for the world to see. Somehow, William Shatner survived it because he was already way past it by the time we learned that it existed. But anyway, we'll be back. The 2 o'clock hour is coming up next here on the Manny Fry Show.
Get more at 971talk.com.